it's a good day for Shell. I think it's a good day for the state of Alaska, a good day for the nation.
A new direction for offshore drilling in Alaska. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, the 31st of March. Good evening. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, a statewide campaign to end domestic violence in 10 years.
It's refreshing in the sense that there's a lot of effort and focus on the issue now, unlike ever before, in my opinion.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, schools, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization.
The Obama administration says the country's new offshore oil drilling policy is a balance between development and conservation. President Obama and Interior Secretary Ken Salazar made the announcement this morning at Andrews Air Force Base in Maryland. The plan received mixed reaction in Alaska. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
President Obama says his administration is committed to developing both traditional and renewable sources of energy. He says the new offshore policy is an attempt to find some middle ground on a sensitive issue.
So the answer is not drilling everywhere all the time, but the answer is not also for us to ignore the fact that we are going to need vital energy sources to maintain our economic growth and our security.
In Alaska, the plan allows existing leases in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas to stand, but the plan cancels future lease sales for the area until federal scientists can complete a better scientific review of the Arctic Ocean ecosystem. And it puts a moratorium on lease sales in Bristol Bay and the area west of it until 2017. That area had been scheduled for a sale next year. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar explained the region is too important to develop.
Bristol Bay has some of the world's most important fisheries, including one of the largest sockeye salmon runs in the world. People come from across the globe to see its bears, its whales, the seals, and the bald eagles. It is a national treasure that we must protect.
That was tough for staff at the Aleutians East Borough to hear. The borough thinks it's possible to protect the environment while drilling for natural gas. But Borough Administrator Sharon Boyette says Salazar's announcement wasn't a surprise. When he took comment on the issue from Alaskans, he flew to the hub community of Dillingham, about 200 miles from the villages closest to the lease sale area. Boyette says while many Dillingham residents oppose the sale, the mood is very different in the Aleutians East Borough.
Because they see their community shrinking and at least one of our communities dying, they were more willing to work to make it happen and make this economic development viable for us.
But environmental groups and fishing organizations were thrilled about the moratorium. Werner Wilson is acting executive director of Nunamta Aluxti, a coalition of 8 village corporations in the Bristol Bay region. He says the amount of offshore oil and gas that would be produced in the region is small, but the risks are great.
Personally, for me, I was born and raised in Bristol Bay. I grew up fishing not only for commercial reasons, but it put food on the table for our family, and we know Bristol Bay's waters, and we know how dangerous it is, and we know how productive they are, and we just don't want to see any potential risks to the fishery.
Wilson says Nunamta Aluxti will now begin working for permanent protection for Bristol Bay. Environmental groups were generally critical of the administration's leasing plans. The Alaska Wilderness League did say it approved of the Interior Department's commitment to sound science in the Arctic, but the League's Kristen Miller's praise stopped there.
Unfortunately, the plan today does come with a bitter pill, which is the green light for exploratory drilling under the controversial Chukchi Lease Sale 193, which was rammed through by the Bush administration before leaving office.
The Wilderness League is one of several environmental groups that joined the native village of Point Hope in a lawsuit to vacate the Chukchi leases. Point Hope resident Ron Oviatt says he hopes the federal government will recognize the need to protect the marine mammals the villagers hunt for subsistence, like bearded seal, walrus, and bowhead whale.
The reason why I'm challenging the oil company is because of our way of life. It is very important for our community because of our animals that we are depending on.
Shell is making plans to do exploratory drilling in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas this summer. Vice President Pete Slaby says the new offshore drilling plan should help the company meet that goal.
You know, I'm really pleased. We see this as an affirmation and by the Obama administration that we can do our work and have a positive impact on the economy, on the energy situation, and we can do this in a way that's going to be sustainable and will have no negative impacts on the environment.
Slaby says a lot still has to come together before the company can send ships north this summer. Shell is waiting for an EPA permit and for a ruling from the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Alaska's Congressman Don Young had harsh words for the new offshore drilling plan. Young says the plan actually stalls U.S. efforts to become energy independent, essentially placing a moratorium on Pacific Coast oil development. But Senator Lisa Murkowski put a more positive spin on it.
The plan that was announced today is a step forward. It allows for the valid existing rights to explore Alaska's offshore oil and gas reserves to go ahead, and I think that that's positive. I think what we're seeing with the decision that was reached today is, again, a validation.
Murkowski says she'll continue working with the administration on proceeding with important future lease sales off Alaska's coast and along the eastern seaboard. Speaking in Juneau today, Senator Mark Begich said offshore resource development should provide a level of revenue sharing for affected coastal states.
As we're moving forward on energy legislation this year, revenue sharing is a must. We got to have our fair share of those oil revenues off the state of Alaska. Now, the good news is because of the plan the president has laid out, there are more allies now than ever before. And I've already been talking to the Democrats from Virginia. Clearly, they are supporters of now revenue sharing.
Begich made those comments after a wide-ranging speech to the state legislature today on issues that have been seen as divisive in the nation's capital. The senator didn't back off from discussing his role in the recently enacted health care plan, the $13 trillion national debt, and the effects of the stimulus money that have come to the state. But the biggest response came when he talked about resource development. APRN's Dave Donaldson reports.
Senator Begich says he's been working for the development of the state's resources, oil, mining, forestry, and fishing. And he says his approach has been to include the private sector in those issues that need federal attention.
Well, state and federal government investments in Alaska are enormously important. I know everyone in this room agrees that it's the private sector that leads the way in job creation. Government's role should be to help create pro-business climate and then get out of the way.
Begich praised the legislature for focusing on the natural gas pipeline from the North Slope to North America. And he said the national focus on the project will intensify.
Soon, you can expect new demonstration of support by the Obama administration for the Alaska Gas Line project, and we're poised to increase loan guarantees and federal support for this vital national project.
In a meeting with reporters following the speech, Begich didn't give details on what to expect. However, he pointed out that President Obama has put the gas line on his list of the top five green projects in the country.
Our efforts right now are to convince the president to make it a national interest project. Why that is important is it brings other resources to the table, helps streamline the permitting process, a variety of other things. I believe that the president, as you saw today, is starting now to unfold elements of his long-term energy strategy to get us more independent on energy, to do energy around our national security and around our national economic security. And this first piece was the OCS. I believe next you'll see some other pieces, and I believe we're making our case why the gas line is a big part of that equation. And I believe the president's folks are very interested in this.
Begich says much of the strength that comes from getting a national interest designation would depend on what the president wants to do with it. But he sees it as very positive that the president is starting to move on energy at the same time that Congress is starting to see the need for a long-term energy plan. And he says Alaska gas is at the top of the priorities. I'm Dave Donaldson in Juneau.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a grow your own ethic takes root in Alaska.
Last year, when you go to the villages and say, what are you concerned about? It was always about energy. This year, everybody's talking about food.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Association of Alaska School Boards, working with school districts statewide to bring innovation to classrooms through digital learning for the 21st century. Information at aasb.org.
Almost 75% of Alaskans have experienced or know someone who has experienced sexual assault and domestic violence. The overall rate of sexual assault in the state is 2.5 times the national average, while the rate of child sexual assault is almost 6 times what it is nationally. Meanwhile, nearly 30% of Alaskans don't have access to victims' services. Even Governor Sean Parnell's family includes a history of abuse. Parnell has called domestic violence and sexual assault an epidemic in Alaska, which he wants to end in 10 years. Today, members of the Parnell administration held rallies in communities throughout the state to kick off a public relations campaign called Alaskans Choose Respect. KTOO's Casey Kelly has more.
We are here to turn the corner. We are here to step out of bondage and despair and step into freedom together.
More than 200 people joined Governor Sean Parnell for a rally at the Capitol building, calling for an end to domestic violence and sexual assault. After the rally, Parnell led a march through downtown Juneau, joined by several legislators and advocates for domestic violence and sexual abuse services. The march ended at Marine Park, where Parnell signed House Bill 307, closing a loophole in state law and allowing judges to issue restraining orders in cases of sexual assault. The governor's 10-year plan to end the epidemic of violence and abuse includes increased funding for law enforcement, tougher sentences for offenders, and outreach.
Giving people permission to talk about it like we are here today, that will prevent domestic violence and sexual assault in the future.
Parnell says his own family history shows Alaskans can overcome abuse.
There's not a family in this state that hasn't been touched by substance abuse, domestic violence, sexual assault, one or all of those. My family is no different. I had a grandfather addicted to alcohol, abusive in his family relationships. My father chose a different way.
Parnell dispatched cabinet members and assistants throughout Alaska for similar rallies. Public Safety Commissioner Joe Masters was in Bethel leading a march from the Tundra Women's Coalition shelter to the University of Alaska Fairbanks Kuskokwim campus. About 50 people joined him, braving blowing snow and temperatures in the teens. Masters, a former village public safety officer and retired state trooper, says he's never seen the state take such a big role in curbing domestic violence.
Other entities that have been dealing with domestic violence, including Native organizations and health corporations, as well as different state entities, including the Department of Public Safety, have been dealing with this issue, but primarily almost in silos. And what this initiative brings is, one, a renewed focus, and actually bringing resources to the table to deal with the issues and coordination.
Back in Juneau, advocates say it's about time.
Today, I'm like, finally. Thank God.
Peggy Brown is executive director of the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. She says there's still a lot of work to do, and she hopes the administration's interest in the issue and the awareness raised through the Choose Respect campaign will indeed reduce the rates of sexual abuse and domestic violence.
If we devote resources and we promote community initiatives, not just a statewide initiative, but like local community initiatives, you might very well see a change or a sharp reduction in 10 years, I'd be happy with.
Besides Juneau and Bethel, rallies were held in 16 other communities around the state, including Anchorage, Kodiak, and Barrow. With help from Shane Iverson and Chris Ho in Bethel, I'm Casey Kelly in Juneau.
Come, compensation checks began going out yesterday to victims of sexual abuse by clergy who sued the Fairbanks Catholic Diocese. The checks are being issued to 287 claimants, primarily Alaska Natives, who were children growing up in Western Alaska villages when they were abused by Catholic priests and other clergy overseen by the Fairbanks Diocese. Victims attorney Ken Rosa says the trustee handling the $9.8 million compensation settlement approved in Fairbanks Diocese bankruptcy proceedings began releasing money on Tuesday.
Finally, after 8 years of litigation and waiting for some of these folks, checks are going out to claimants across the state, relatively small checks, but they are a long-awaited and highly anticipated.
Rosa says it's being kept confidential how much the checks are for, but that the amounts were determined by a neutral third party, a retired judge who assessed the abuse claims and determined compensation based on severity. Rosa says $7.9 million in checks is being issued. The remaining $2 million in the diocese compensation fund is being withheld to cover possible costs related to securing an insurance payout. Rosa expects the money will eventually go to claimants along with insurance payments. While spring is already here, it will be a while before most Alaskan gardeners can start putting seeds in the ground. But there are dedicated gardeners who are already at work starting seeds indoors or in greenhouses. There appears to be a lot of enthusiasm for local food production this year, as APRN's Steve Heimel found out during the statewide public radio call-in show, Talk of Alaska.
The new executive director of the U.S. Agriculture Department's Farm Service Agency in Alaska, Danny Constantine, says he is seeing it all over the state in urban and rural Alaska.
I talked to AmeriCorps and RuralCap folks who say, you know, last year when you'd go to the villages and say, you know, what are you concerned about? It was always about energy. This year, everybody's talking about food.
Of course, anytime fuel costs go up, it's going to cost more to transport food all those miles from the lower 48, and even more to get it to rural hubs and then villages. So local food is getting more attention, whether it's subsistence fishing, hunting and gathering, or gardening, in a lot of different ways, as callers to Talk of Alaska were quick to say.
I have a CSA farm up here in Fairbanks. We're going to have about 160 members.
Last year, I bought my last piece of lettuce in April and the first one again last January.
I've already got a mailing list of about 60 families in my neighborhood, and that's how I'm going to start out. I've got probably 3/4 of an acre under the till now that I'm working on, and I think I'll be able to sustain my lifestyle I have right now once I retire in another year or so.
Constantine says the USDA's approach now is to look at local food systems and what the government can do financially and in terms of technical assistance to strengthen those systems. That's what leads to what they call food security.
We are at risk with our dependence on outside food. We need to be more food secure.
One farmer who's dug in a big way is Tim Myers in Bethel. He says he can sell as much as he can produce, and he'll be planting 4.5 acres. He says that can feed 50 families. He wants to double production each year for the next 2 years, and he's already eyeing shipping his produce to other parts of the state.
In Bethel here, we've got about 200,000 pounds of negotiable air freight going back to Anchorage, which is a FedEx hub, every single day. So, I don't know. I see tremendous potential in agriculture out here.
Myers points to a National Geographic map of soil fertility and how much there is of it on what was thought to be fairly barren tundra. He's had crops growing there for years with only organic methods. Food security is also on the minds of a group of people in Sitka.
Our emergency food supply is in Portland, which really isn't going to help us very much if we really need it.
Kerry McLean is president of the Sitka Local Foods Network, started by the Regional Native Health Corporation. He says their garden land is very limited now, but they have set up a farmer's market, a community garden, and a gardening exchange for people who will let other people garden their land. The Sitka Network is also starting a local seafood festival and 2 CSAs, or community-supported agriculture ventures, where consumers pay ahead for the yield of farms. The venture uses shipments from the lower 48 CSA Full Circle Farms to keep supplies going beyond the short Alaska growing season. But out in Bethel, Tim Myers wants to feed those 50 families year-round. He's putting in more root cellars. It's a fairly simple process.
I'm going to bury 5 40-foot shipping containers, and I figure I'm going to be able to store almost 200,000 pounds of crops in there in the fall.
It looks like the food production efforts will keep on coming. There is now an Alaska Community Agriculture website, and the USDA and other interested parties, including the state government, are planning on setting up a state food policy council this coming May. Tim Myers is completely on board with the food security concept. He is not optimistic about the prospects of our economic system.
The thing that I'm hearing, food prices are going to triple here in the next period of time, and that's going to put everything else in perspective if all that food goes up three times in value.
Down in Sitka, Carrie McLean says all their gardens combined amount to something under an acre. They're hoping for a deal to make some state land available for gardening. But for the future, he's got his eye on the town's more than 40 acres of ball fields. In Anchorage, I'm Steve Heimel.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com. The Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association was created by the legislature to provide insurance coverage for Alaskans who may feel they have become uninsurable. It offers hope to people with certain high-risk chronic illnesses or those who have exhausted employer-based insurance, and to some under 65-year-olds who are Medicare eligible. Find out more. Ask an insurance broker about ACHIA. More information at www.achia.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association.
State and federal wildlife officials have patched things up and agreed to move on following the accidental shooting of four Yukon Charlie Rivers National Preserve-based wolves during a state predator control hunt on March 17th. Representatives of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game and the National Park Service met yesterday to discuss what happened. NPS spokesman John Quinley says the state was given all the tracking frequencies, but Fish and Game failed to get all of the information to the state crew doing the shooting.
Because of some circumstances, understandings, mistakes, whatever, the full list was not in the hands of the people who were doing the work in the field.
The state can legally harvest any wolf that strays off national conservation lands, but had pledged to avoid the Yukon Charlie-based packs. Fish and Game spokeswoman Kathy Harms says the state will be more thorough in carrying out future predator control operations.
Double-check information, triple-check if necessary, to make sure that everybody's on the same page and everybody knows what goes on.
The state took a total of 15 wolves during its three-day mid-March aerial hunt in what it calls the Upper Yukon Tanana Aerial Control Zone. The sprawling area of state land in eastern Alaska borders on the Yukon Charlie Preserve. The state suspended the hunt due to deteriorating tracking conditions, but could resume the aerial hunt if there's fresh snow. The state wants to trim the area's estimated wolf population by as much as 85% to improve caribou and moose hunting. Juno Funnyman Jeff Brown unleashes his latest project on an unsuspecting public on April 1st. Brown's Real Alaskan magazine is available at select locations in many of the state's larger communities, and the attractive photo-packed publication answers many of the questions visitors to our state often ask. He says he's publisher, editor, and
chief bottle washer, everything like that. You betcha. I got help of a lot of friends, but I've been working on it for about a year.
You know, at first glance, you can tell it's a joke, but the publication itself, let's talk about that, is no joke. It's beautiful.
Well, actually, it is a joke. I want people to look at it and think, oh, boy, is this how they clean glaciers in Alaska? Is this how they farm fish? Is this how they collect moose nuggets? And I kind of want them to kind of be taken in with a joke a few pages before they realize they've been had.
How did you get these photos?
Well, I've been producing the Juno What, which is a newspaper, for about 20 years now. This year, I had to be dragged kicking and streaming into the 21st century in the youth program called InDesign, and it allowed me to actually design just like a real magazine might look. And I knew I was going to do this last April, so I started shooting, taking pictures, and messing with the pictures as much as possible to make the magazine available for this April Fool's Day.
I mean, anyone with half a brain can see it's totally written tongue-in-cheek, and it has features articles about how the weathermen divine their predictions, moose in and out of season, collecting moose nuggets, just to name a few. But most spectacular are the full-color, glossy ads, and some of them look almost real.
Well, the publication is pretty much paid for by the advertisers who have been advertising with me for a number of years, in addition to some new people, too. They kind of give me full latitude to fool around with their business.
You've skewered some of the sacred cows, I guess. You have the Feed the Wild Alaskan Garbage Bears Foundation, for instance, with a beautiful, beautiful black bear just ripping into somebody's backyard. Are you afraid of maybe insulting some people or getting on their wrong side?
I certainly hope not. I've had people from both sides of the political spectrum look at this, or maybe all sides of the political spectrum look at this magazine and like it and laugh a lot. It's not my job to make people angry. It's my job to make people laugh.
So you have a title now with the state. You're the Department of Hilarity?
For various governors, I've been the Commissioner of Mirth, the Minister of Merriment, Balloonist Laureate, and for Governor Sean Parnell, I am the Master of Cheerful Smiles.
All right. Well, I'm going to petition the governor for a division of hilarity. We really need that these days. So what else can you tell me about your publication? You think you're going to make some money on it?
Hopefully it'll pay me back a little bit for the time, but I really want people to laugh at it. I want people to look at the my friends at the Alaska SWAT team and see how they actually eradicate a lot of the pests that we have in this Northland here. And I want people, again, I really want people to laugh. My biggest joy here is when I hear people laughing out loud at some of the things they see in the magazine.
Jeff Brown is the publisher and editor of Real Alaskan magazine and also the program director at member station KTOO in Juneau. The magazine will be available at outlets across the state starting tomorrow. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at APRN.org. We had reports tonight from Casey Kelly in Juneau and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau and Steve Heimel from Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. And I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. The University of Alaska now offers both a Bachelor of Science and a Bachelor of Arts degree in fisheries. A fisheries degree prepares you for a career in fisheries biology, management, business or policy, and more. Learn more at www.uaf.edu/fish. The UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences, educating fisheries and marine science experts in Alaska for Alaska. This message sponsored by the UAF School of Fisheries and Ocean Sciences. Every day, people all over Alaska are discovering how public transportation benefits them, their businesses, and their communities. Public transportation in Alaska provides 7 million rides a year to work, medical appointments, shopping, schools, social opportunities, wherever people need to go. With public transportation available, the going is good. Find out more at goodgoingalaska.com. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Mobility Coalition, a nonprofit organization.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.